Today, Al-Qaeda, the new franchising success.
Osama bin Laden's son-in-law has been convicted of three terrorism charges at a trial in New York.
Sulaiman Abu Ghaith was convicted on all three charges, conspiring to kill US nationals and also conspiring to assist a terrorist organisation, that being Al-Qaeda.
The conviction of Osama bin Laden's son-in-law last week in New York was one of a number of blows the US has landed against the terrorist organisation Al-Qaeda. Yet despite convictions like this one, targeted killings via drone strikes, and the death of Osama bin Laden himself, Al-Qaeda and its affiliates are re-emerging as a force in North Africa and the Middle East.
It's not clear who controls this city between the militants of Al-Qaeda and the local
Sunni tribes. The Iraqi army is preparing to launch a major assault to try to reclaim the city of Fallujah after it was overrun by Al-Qaeda. The militant movement has emerged again in western Iraq and across the border in northern Syria.
The Al-Qaeda of 2014 is quite different in terms of structure and organisation from the Al-Qaeda that first emerged under Osama bin Laden in the 1990s. Hello, this is Rear Vision on RN and via the web. I'm Annabelle Quince, and today we trace the re-emergence of Al-Qaeda and its affiliates. Al-Qaeda, as it was originally conceived, was a highly hierarchical organisation with clear aims and philosophy. Seth Jones is Associate Director of the International Security and Defence Policy Centre at the RAND Corporation.
Al-Qaeda, at least as it was initially conceived by Osama bin Laden, Ayman al-Zawahiri and others that were involved in the late 1980s, viewed it as a global movement, as global as possible, but one that at least was influenced, if not controlled, by Osama bin Laden himself and a central command element at that time based out of Pakistan. Later in Africa and the Sudan, and then back again in Pakistan and Afghanistan. It was one that had a range of committees that reported directly to bin Laden, that were involved in financing religious elements to issue fatwas or religious edicts, propaganda and information operations, military and combat operations, and then finances both externally bringing in money, but also overseeing how money was spent within the organization. Then in terms of attacks and plots, as much as possible, having the organization involved in the strategic and conceptual aspects of plots, whether they were the 1998 attacks against U.S. embassies in Africa or against the USS Cole in 2000, but one that we saw originated and was conceptualized to some degree by the core itself and the command nodes under bin Laden, and then executed overseas. And that's really the vision that bin Laden, at least by 2001, September 2001, had and what the structure looked like at that point.
And did they have a clear aim and philosophy that was articulated?
When you look at the statements of bin Laden and the writings of key individuals like Ayman al-Zawahiri, the organization had several objectives. One was to establish a caliphate, an Islamic emirate that really moved from southern parts of Spain into North Africa and then moved into parts of Europe in the Balkans, for example, in the Middle East, the Arabian Peninsula, down into South Asia, and potentially into the Philippines and Indonesia, areas with notable Muslim populations. As part of that process, then, the goal was to target what Al-Qaeda called far enemy regimes. They would include Australia, the United States, the United Kingdom, that provided assistance to those near enemy regimes, the governments that they wanted to overthrow and establish an Islamic emirate. Focus was probably mostly on near enemies, but it did include, to some degree, what you might call the far enemy.
The once towering World Trade Center in New York's financial district is no more.
Freedom itself was attacked this morning by a faceless coward. Make no mistake, the United States will hunt down and punish those responsible.
Before 11th of September, there was only one address of Al-Qaeda and one headquarters, which is Tora Bora or Kandahar in Afghanistan.
Abdul Bari Atwan is the author of The Secret History of Al-Qaeda and After Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda, the Next Generation.
It was a pyramid-built organization, Osama bin Laden at the top of the pyramid, and then in the base of the pyramid you have those recruits, and in the middle the field commanders. But after 11th of September, Al-Qaeda was dispersed because of the American invasion of Afghanistan or the bombardment of Afghanistan. They managed to topple the Taliban government. Al-Qaeda faced a very, very severe losses there because they are not protected by Taliban as they used to be, and most of Al-Qaeda men either were arrested or killed by the American bombardment. Few people survived.
Forces of Taliban and Al-Qaeda have several choices. They can flee and reorganize in the south. They can flee and melt into the countryside. If they reorganize in the south, we're going to go get them. If they go to ground, we will, as the president said, root them out.
Well, the decentralization began to happen after the overthrow of the Taliban regime, where the Al-Qaeda leadership in Afghanistan at that point went in two directions. The vast majority of the leaders, including Zawahiri bin Laden, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, went to Pakistan. Bin Laden also sent what he called his management council. It was a backup command and control regime, individuals like Saif al-Adl, Sulaiman Abu Ghaith, to Iran. Some of bin Laden's family went to Iran as well, with initially the support of the Iranian regime, and then many of them were put under house arrest.
We are now acting because the risks of inaction would be far greater. The security of the world requires disarming Saddam Hussein now.
After 11th of September, the American committed a very, very grave mistake when they invaded Iraq and occupied it. This actually was a heaven for Al-Qaeda, because this kind of invasion, this kind of occupation present them with a huge gift. So many, many of Al-Qaeda members and recruits moved to Iraq and they start fighting the American troops there. So about 80 to 90% of Al-Qaeda infrastructure actually was destroyed by the American bombardment of Afghanistan. But after the invasion of Iraq, the occupation of Iraq, actually Al-Qaeda rejuvenated, Al-Qaeda regrouped again, and they became extremely dangerous. So it was Iraq was the first branch of Al-Qaeda outside Afghanistan. So after 11th of September, Al-Qaeda decentralized completely, and it became a flat, loose organization. Now you have Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, Al-Qaeda in Syria, Al-Qaeda in Somalia, Al-Qaeda in North Africa, Al-Qaeda in Libya. Al-Qaeda now is a franchised organization. They have branches in most of the Middle East and most of the Islamic world, and it is growing.
Bombings, shootings, insurgent attacks. It certainly looks like the same old story in Iraq.
In 2006, 2007, Al-Qaeda was very, very strong in Iraq. Iraq was always a secular country, so they are not used to the ultra-Orthodox applications of the Sharia law on their parts of the world. And Al-Qaeda committed, or some of people who are considered Al-Qaeda members, committed a lot of mistakes. For example, chopping the hands of the thieves, beheading anybody who committed any sort of Western-style modernization or practices, for example, stoning men or women who committed adulteries. So this kind of practice did not actually swallowed easily by the people there. The American were very clever. General Petraeus, the leader of the American troops in Iraq, he realized that there's opportunity to fight Al-Qaeda by actually recruiting the tribes and creating some sort of awakening groups in order to fight Al-Qaeda. He managed to recruit more than 80,000 people in Iraq, mainly from the tribal people, in order to fight Al-Qaeda. And definitely, he gained a lot of success.
By 2006, there had been so much animosity built up that there was what ended up being called the Awakening. And it really was local Sunni tribes, the Iraqi government, and a range of U.S. organizations, from the military to diplomats, to intelligence agents, providing assistance to Iraqis that resisted Al-Qaeda in Iraq. And so, in short, Al-Qaeda developed a very, very brutal, oppressive, violent strategy that most Iraqis just could not accept over time, and that allowed the organization to be severely undermined by 2006 into 2007 and 2008. And again, it lost, over the next several years, it lost virtually all of the territory it had once controlled, including in cities like Ramadi, Fallujah, parts of Baghdad.
The U.S. military says Osama bin Laden's correspondence shows the al-Qaeda leader was losing control of the network.
The papers show that bin Laden was worried about losing the sympathy of Muslims and described operations killing Muslims as mistakes. He also urges his affiliates to stay focused on attacking the United States. The U.S. military says the documents reveal a leader who was not the puppet master of terrorist groups around the world, but instead was frustrated by their incompetence.
And so would have Osama bin Laden have had any say at all or any influence in how al-Qaeda acted in during that period in Iraq?
Well, Osama bin Laden was, we now know, very unhappy about the direction that al-Qaeda in Iraq had gone in. And instead of sending communication to Zarqawi directly, what we do know, because it's become public, is he had several of his deputies send letters to Zarqawi telling him to stop the beheadings, stop the killing of Shia, in part because he was undermining local support for al-Qaeda. Ayman al-Zawahiri sent a message, several messages to Zarqawi, walking through these steps and urging him to stop acting in so extreme a manner. Atiya Abdulrahman, who is the general manager, also sent Zarqawi letters pleading for him to stop. So what Osama bin Laden's strategy appears to have been is to take his top deputies, write letters encouraging al-Qaeda in Iraq to stop its behavior. And actually, it was problematic. I mean, there were some efforts by al-Qaeda at that point to back off, but by 2006, it was too late. Alienated so much of the local population that it was difficult for them to win it back. Certainly win it back very quickly, but we could still see, even in those years, some of the limits of the core leadership in Pakistan, because as deeply opposed as they were to the behavior of al-Qaeda in Iraq leaders, they could not ultimately control from Pakistan day-to-day activity.
You're with Rear Vision on RN and via the web. I'm Annabelle Quince, and today we're tracing the re-emergence of al-Qaeda over the past few years. Despite the setback in Iraq due to the Awakening campaign, al-Qaeda affiliates expanded across North Africa and the Middle East.
So the first major affiliate that is established, 2004, and that's in al-Qaeda in Iraq. And over the next several years, we have an increase in the number of affiliates. And again, affiliates are organizations whose leaders swear allegiance or bayat to al-Qaeda leaders in Pakistan. In 2006, an organization that had existed under a different name in North Africa rebrands itself as al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb. So now al-Qaeda has affiliates in both Iraq and North Africa, with a particularly strong presence in parts of Algeria. By 2009, al-Qaeda adds a Yemen contingent. Bin Laden had encouraged several of his fighters to conduct attacks against the Saudi regime. They were beaten back pretty significantly by 2007 and 2008. The remnants of those individuals move to Yemen and start what is known as al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula under Nasir al-Wahishi. By 2012, in Somalia, al-Shabaab establishes a formal relationship with core al-Qaeda, and then in 2013, Jabhat al-Nusra establishes a formal relationship with al-Qaeda, pledges its loyalty. So by the end of 2013, we have a core that's been weakened somewhat after the death of bin Laden, but affiliates that have sworn allegiance in Iraq, North Africa, Yemen, Somalia, and Syria.
With increasing and deadly efficiency, American forces are using drones to prosecute the war in Afghanistan and against al-Qaeda and its operatives who use bases in Pakistan.
One of the key problems for the al-Qaeda leadership in Pakistan was the drone program, which was led by the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency and conducted a range of targeted strikes, particularly in the federally administered tribal areas of Pakistan. They killed a series of successive heads of al-Qaeda's external operations unit and many of its senior leaders. And the challenge that al-Qaeda faced was that it was very difficult to communicate with the outside world. Any email communications or cell phone or even satellite phone calls were vulnerable to being monitored by Western spy agencies and then used for actionable, targetable attacks against the leadership. Mm-hmm. So what this did is it made it difficult for the Corps to communicate with its affiliates out in the field and then with other Salafi jihadist groups, say in Nigeria with Boko Haram. And so the challenge then bin Laden had is he could provide some strategic guidance. We know from the bin Laden documents that he was in communication with a range of individuals, and he attempted to weigh in on such matters as what should various organizations, say al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghreb, do about kidnapped French citizens. Should it kill them? Should it try to extract money for their release? So bin Laden weighed in on those issues. The range of issues on changing the name of the organization, bin Laden weighed in on those. He was in discussions with Boko Haram. Before 2012, was in discussions with al-Shabaab leaders in Somalia. So he was involved in a range of those activities. He also encouraged many of them to plot attacks against the West. But really, bin Laden, before his death, was involved at the strategic level in providing some guidance and weighing in on issues that individuals in the field asked for advice on.
Reaction in the Middle East to Osama bin Laden's death has ranged from triumphalism to condemnation. Many Arab leaders have welcomed his killing as an important step in the war against terror.
After the death of bin Laden, the drone program continued to be successful at targeting key al-Qaeda leaders, which made it difficult for them to communicate with the field. So it really meant that individuals like Ayman al-Zawahiri could do some things, but not a lot. They could put out audio messages. They could put out video messages encouraging individuals, for example, to go fight the jihad in Syria that began in 2011. Zarqawi was involved in affiliate discussions with groups like the Mujahideen Shura Council in the Sinai of Egypt, the Muhammad Jamal Network in Egypt. So there were discussions on bringing in additional affiliates. But again, the more severe the pressure from Western spy agencies and the more we saw an expansion of these groups, the less day-to-day influence that the Corps had. And this really hit rock bottom in 2013 with the divisions between al-Qaeda in Iraq and Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria.
Demonstrators in the capital, Tunis, climbed on top of the roof of the Interior Ministry.
The overthrow of longtime Tunisian leader Zine El Abidin Ben Ali has stunned the region and worried neighbouring leaders.
They want Hosni Mubarak, the president they see as corrupt, to resign and allow full democratic elections for the first time in 30 years.
A wall of sound as Egypt's Vice President Omar Suleiman announces that President Hosni Mubarak will step down.
One by one, cities across Libya have exploded in violence as the anti-government protests spread through the country, demanding the dictator Muammar Gaddafi leave power.
The Arab uprisings did several things. Among the most important was, and unfortunate, was it weakened governments in a number of countries. In Libya, for example, after the Gaddafi regime was overthrown, Libya really deteriorated into a series of militia forces, with the government controlling cities and parts of cities, but with much of the country coming under the control of sub-state actors. According to the World Bank governance indicators, in the years following the Arab uprisings, the levels of political stability dropped by 17% from 2010 to 2012. Government effectiveness across the Middle East and North Africa dropped by 10%. Rule of law by 6%. Control of corruption by 6%. And virtually all of the World Bank's basic governance indicators, there was a notable decline. And part of that was what replaced authoritarian regimes was weak, fractured democracies. And in several of them, in Egypt, we had a democratic process that led to the Muslim Brotherhood, followed by a coup. In Syria, we had the deterioration into civil war that began to spill over into neighboring Lebanon. So again, in many of these countries, Mali, a very serious civil war that the French had to get involved in. What the Arab uprisings did is weaken governance in key parts of the Middle East and North Africa in particular, and it allowed a number of these Salafi jihadist groups, including al-Qaeda, to establish safe havens, training camps, raid weapons caches in places like Libya, and provided an opportunity for these groups to gain a foothold.
Al-Nusra is an affiliate of al-Qaeda in Syria. This is what its leader, Abu Muhammad...
Well, they control quite a lot of land in the east of Syria and indeed in the north along the Turkish border and down to Aleppo. And
it's a big militia. It's believed to have between 10 and 20,000 soldiers.
Al-Qaeda was invited and it was encouraged and it was armed directly or indirectly by Arab countries like Saudi Arabia, like Qatar, who got a lot of money. Even the American actually closed their eyes about it. In later stage, they said they are terrorists and we have to fight them. Turkey facilitated passage for those people to come through from different parts of the Muslim and the Arab world and to go to Syria via the Turkish territories. So now there is a huge problem. Syria is, as I said, semi-failed state. This is the best place for Al-Qaeda. So that when I said Al-Qaeda is benefited from the Arab Spring, I mean that they are stronger now. They are very strong in Libya. They are very strong in Yemen. They are very strong in Syria. They are very strong in Iraq. They are very strong in Somalia. So that's what I mean. So they are benefited or the great beneficial from the Arab Spring. Anarchy means Al-Qaeda.
With the number of Al-Qaeda affiliates emerging in the Middle East, have there been disagreements between them over territory or control?
Probably the most significant disagreement among al-Qaeda-affiliated organizations began to occur in 2013. In May, in fact, al-Qaeda leader Ayman al-Zawahiri sends a very terse note to Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi. He's the head of al-Qaeda in Iraq, and to Abu Muhammad al-Jalani, who's the head of Jabhat al-Nusra in Syria. And his purpose in doing this is to resolve what is an escalating dispute between these two leaders over command and control. Jabhat al-Nusra had been formed in late 2011 as a branch of al-Qaeda in Iraq. They were the affiliate that was involved in the war in Syria, but over time they became much more autonomous. They found their own funding streams. They had their own leadership structure. They were involved in planning their own operations in Syria. And so by 2013, what you had is a big divisive break between the Syrian contingent, and that is Jabhat al-Nusra, and al-Qaeda in Iraq, to the degree that al-Qaeda in Iraq makes a very public statement saying that it runs and it oversees all of the al-Qaeda groups operating in the region, including in Syria and including al-Nusra. Al-Nusra strongly disagrees, turns to Ayman al-Zawahiri in Pakistan, pledges loyalty to him, and this is where Ayman al-Zawahiri has to adjudicate between two disputing affiliates now. They can't reach an agreement. He sends someone to Syria to adjudicate what is a growing divide between two al-Qaeda affiliates. He sends repeated letters from Pakistan. He appoints someone named Abu Khalid al-Suri to serve as the mediator between the two sides, and he cannot reach an agreement. In January of 2014, Zawahiri from Pakistan gives a final urging to these two al-Qaeda affiliates, both operating in Syria, to end their disagreement, and he doesn't succeed. In February in 2014, in one of the greatest, probably most important, and certainly one of the most profound steps that Zawahiri takes as leader of al-Qaeda, he dismisses al-Qaeda in Iraq from al-Qaeda itself. It's an excommunication. And what it has led to is major factional fighting and ideological disagreements between al-Nusra in Syria, which is an al-Qaeda affiliate, and now the former al-Qaeda affiliate, what's called the Islamic State of Iraq, and al-Sham, or the Levant. To the degree that we have seen combat operations between these two organizations, and it's part ideological, but it's also part personality. So it's a great example of factional fighting, literal fighting between two al-Qaeda affiliates in a case like Syria, which is just at the moment where al-Qaeda has expanded on multiple continents, suffering its most significant internal fight.
Al-Qaeda is not an organization or central organization as it used to be before 11th of September. Al-Qaeda now is an ideology. Osama bin Laden set this ideology, and it is on the internet, so people can look and they can actually adopt the ideology of Al-Qaeda and open branches or start jihad. We cannot say there is some sort of organization or coordination between the several branches. There is no coordination as it used to be. These branches are fully independent, and the field commanders, that they decide what to do and what not to do according to the circumstances on the ground.
So what is this likely to mean for Al-Qaeda as an organization? Are all these Al-Qaeda affiliates now so sort of disparate that in a way it's really not an Al-Qaeda that we could recognize or understand?
I think the direction Al-Qaeda has moved in and where it's likely to continue moving is in four tiers. The first is a very weak core that's based in Pakistan, and that's that we can call Al-Qaeda core. The second is a decreasing number of affiliates, groups who swear allegiance to the core. They're in Yemen, Somalia, North Africa, and Syria. And then a much larger number of Salafi jihadist groups that don't pledge loyalty but are Salafist groups, and they're also jihadist groups. And then a fourth tier of individuals that they're really individuals and they're inspired. And these would be, for example, the bombers in Boston in 2013 that read propaganda online, that used Al-Qaeda materials like Inspire magazine to help put their bomb together. So what we have and the direction we've been moving in is really four different tiers. Two of them we can potentially call Al-Qaeda. Most of them we can't. And it's really a very decentralized apparatus. But what is concerning is the number of these groups is actually increasing. So what we're seeing is two trends. One is a growing decentralization, but a second is actually an increase in the number of these Salafi jihadist groups, an increase in the size of fighters. And then third, an increase in the number of attacks and casualties and fatalities from those attacks that these groups are perpetrating. So we're tracking multiple different, in some cases, conflicting trends.
Seth Jones, Associate Director of the International Security and Defence Policy Centre at the RAND Corporation. My other guest, journalist and author, Abdul Bari Atwan. Transcripts and audio of this and all Rear Vision programs are available at the website abc.net.au/radionational/revision. Today's sound engineer is Phil McKellar. I'm Annabelle Quince and this is Rear Vision on RN. Thanks for joining us.
The Australian Museum in Sydney is the country's oldest. In its 127 years, it's never had a woman in charge, until now. Kim McKay isn't a scientist or a museum professional, but she co-founded Clean Up Australia and worked for National Geographic.
Entree from National Geographic opened doors for you all over the world, although not the door at the Great Pyramid, but it did open doors.
Opening doors is something she's good at. Kim McKay is on Sunday Profile. Listen anytime at the RN website.